Take off.
All right, guys, y'all ready?
Yes, sir.
TJ, I'm at it.
TJ.
All right, guys, we're going to hop into step four and five here real quick. So when do you do an inventory? Yeah. After the third step prayer, we stand up, it says, next, we launched. So people always wonder, you hear people immediately sometimes say, you know, work the steps at your own pace or what, and that doesn't work that way. So what I always do when I meet with a guy to do a third step prayer, I instruct him to bring a spiral notebook, college rule, at that point to that first meeting. And as soon as we get up off our knees and sit on a couch or chair or wherever we are, I give him an outline of how I want an inventory. I generally write in his, what I always do is I get his book and I open it up and I write it out and I write one of mine on his first. My experience with men going through the steps is usually dad is number one or two right there at the top of the list, so I generally start with there. Some people are real specific. There's one guy that says that we go back through our lives, and the way he does that is he writes the most recent resentment and goes backwards to the first thing he can remember. I mean, that's technical. You have a sponsor. If you guys do an inventory here, you do whatever you're told to do here. But in the next page, on page 64, it says our liquor was but a symptom. We had to get down to causes and condition. This is what we talked about when we transitioned away from the fact that drugs and alcohol are the problem and I'm the problem. So we get down to the causes and conditions, and the causes and conditions show up in columns 3 and 4 when we do an inventory. I am selfish and self-centered, and an alcoholic is an extreme example of that. I have desires to have life go the way I want to do it, and I'll do whatever it takes to get it. Some of us are really outspoken, loud, demanding, and intimidating to get our ways, and some people are kind and manipulative and do the right thing to get, and that's kind of the tact I've always taken. People pleasing is not real. People pleasing is not, it's me pleasing. I'm pleasing you so my life will be better, you know. But honestly, this is one of those things with Dylan and I just went through this exercise last year, and when you've been sober a bit, 4 and 5 is a different view than it is, particularly if you do your very first inventory. Anybody done one before and doing a third, fifth step, or anybody? So what this is about, when I talk to a brand new guy, we're not trying to understand all the inner workings of the mind of that person. Because let me let you know a little secret. When you do a list of character defects, you're not going to have any that are unique and no one's ever heard of. They're all essentially the same. Selfish, arrogant, lustful, greedy, prideful, all the same ones. To me, what a fourth and fifth step is in the beginning, the first time, is a confession. And I'm not talking about a Catholic confession, but in the same way. We all have secrets that we showed up here with, or the first time we showed up somewhere, and those ones where we lay in bed and go, I ain't fucking telling nobody that. I never will. My experience was when I went to treatment the first time, I was sitting laying in bed one night, and somebody had talked about 4 and 5 that day. And I had a memory of something that happened to me as a child, probably 7 or 8. And I lay there and went, I ain't telling nobody that. And then this thought came, you won't stay sober if you don't. So the next morning, I did something that's not suggested, or maybe it is. Like I said, there's no right way or wrong way. I had a meeting with the counselor who ran, you know, our cottage or whatever, and I sat down, and before he said a word, he was going to talk to me about going to sober living. Before he said a word, I told him out loud what had happened to me as a kid. But he had no idea what I was talking about, but I knew I had to get it out to somebody. So one of the things, the way this works is when I sit down with a guy and he goes to this inventory, it's always, you know, it's always the same thing. It's, you know, dad didn't love me enough, mom loved me too much, so-and-so did this, so-and-so did that. Then it's a list of girlfriends, and it's a list against guys that I've competed against in my life for girlfriends, attention, or love, or whatever, and this guy, business associates. And when I sit down, I remember the first time I did a fist step on the back porch of a guy, and he said, okay, tell me the thing that you did not want to tell me, which you didn't write down. And I spent 30 minutes unloading all the stuff. And what I'm talking about with stuff, typically we're talking to sexual nature, okay? So when we sit down, the way Tarek does it, he asks 4 or 5 questions. Homosexual experiences, unless you're homosexual, that's fine. But for straight guys, you ever paid for an abortion? Ever been involved in rape, armed robbery, these things? You know, you get those things, which kind of covers some of the bases of the dirty, dark, shameful stuff we don't want to discuss. When I sit down with a guy, I say, let's clean it all out. What's the nastiest, dirtiest shit you've ever done? You know, and they get it out. And it's not for me to hear it or be shocked, because I've never been shocked. Most of the time what happens is you'll say something to a sponsor and he may laugh because he had the same experience. But I don't know about you guys, but with speed and dope, there is sex and places and people are part of the deal. You know, I usually did not do meth and go to a movie theater, okay? I went to a hotel, strip clubs and bars and all the things that happen, all the things that you see, witness, or involved in. Certainly stuff that there's a lot of stuff that I would never want my wife to know. And by the way, if you ever learn experience, if you ever married to somebody in recovery and you see a notebook of some kind laying around, you kick that shit as far as you can across the room and leave, because you don't want to read what she's done either, right? So there's this idea that... So I did some stuff that I didn't think would connect. For me, sex, porn, strip clubs, and cocaine and ecstasy were wrapped together. They were not separate. They were part of the package. The things that I saw, I saw friends of mine sexually assault girls, and those things have to be talked about. And there's really nothing you can do with it except to confess it. So I heard this a long time ago at a halfway house in Birmingham, that the guy that ran the place said, the most spiritual experience you'll ever have is to hear your own voice tell the truth about who you are out loud. Mm. It's a confession. I did this, and now it's gone. It doesn't have the power to kill me anymore. So really, in the beginning, what 4 and 5 is, they're not about finding all these things that where you've messed up and blah, blah, blah. It's about turning shame to guilt. We can deal with guilt out in the open, but we can't deal with shame out in the open. And many of you guys I know have pushed up to a bar or broken out of line or loaded a needle trying to escape some of the things you did. And my experience is it works for just a minute and then it comes back, you know. So that's how we deal with this process. It's a confession to be free. I also know that if you get up from a fifth step and walk away leaving even one thing not discussed, you probably will not overcome drinking. The book actually says that. Some people probably had that experience. I had that experience before. So that was part of my thing that was like, and it didn't end up in my relapse with me, but it was like 2 months after I did a fifth step the second time, and I called a sponsor up and let him know I had to have something. I told him something I'd forgotten. So that first one really, guys, is about a deep, dark confession. So you really have to, you find somebody you trust, or in my situation, it was like, because of the first step experience, I was so beaten down, I really didn't even care if I trusted the guy fully or not. I had to let somebody know. And so it was a beautiful thing that this guy invited me over on a Saturday afternoon. He had plenty of stuff to do, had the wife and kids and all the stuff going on, but he let me come to his house on the back porch, got me some coffee and an ashtray, and sat there and listened to me for 4 hours tell all this stuff. It's a powerful spiritual experience. To me, a lot of people love, 6 and 7, 8, to me, 4 and 5 is the most magical experience you'll ever have. And what's crazy about it is, and I'll let Dylan get into 6 and 7 in a minute, but there's a time after that, we're returning from home and we have this hour thing. A lot of that time, it never says it in here, but I've always thought that part of that first 30 minutes of that hour alone is to remember and really sit with the idea that I tell him everything. Because I've had sponsees drive away from the house and call me an hour later and say, hey, man, I got to tell you something else. And it's like, okay, let's just get it out of whatever it is. And so the one thing is, if you're in the right type of rooms, there's nobody that can be shocked by what you've done. We've all done it. So we walk around unique. When I got in treatment, I walked around with a sign. I felt like I had a sign on my shirt that listed all this dirty shit I did. Turns out everybody had that same shirt on, I've literally never been judged as I've set a fifth step, and I've never heard anything that I was taken back by, all of it. We get down in the dirt when we get out there, you know. So you don't want to tell your mom and dad, you know. You want to tell someone else armed with the facts who's been there with you. And it certainly, this is not a confession for you guys to get on the phone and call your girlfriend and tell her. This is not, that's not what I'm talking about. Don't do that shit, you know. most guys, when you meet them in a place like this, their number one goal, not set. I got to make amends. I got to set it right. I got to make it right. That's 100% driven by self. I got to make every, I feel so bad about what I've done out there. I got to let those people know I'm ready to make it right. These steps are in order for a process. I'm not armed to do anything until this guilt and shame has been removed in a fifth step confession type situation. So however you guys have been told to do that, that's the way to do it. But the most important part from that is to get it all out. And if somebody has something they want to say after, grab me and we'll go to the tree line. We'll, like, that's the type of thing I'm talking about. Just get it out. And something crazy happens. To me, it's the first time in the book and in my own experience that the thought or obsession of alcohol and drugs begins to be lifted. For some people, it's different. Some people have an experience in step one where they never think about drinking again. Bill had that experience. You know, he was in the hospital, and he said, if there's a God, show yourself. He claims that the lights got bright, and the wind blew through, and he fell to his knees and never had the desire to drink again. That wasn't my experience. But what happened, the first time I did a fifth step, I was driving down the interstate, and I realized it had been about 2 weeks since I thought about getting high. It had been 2 weeks since I thought about not getting high. Hmm. The problem had been removed. It's like the book says. It simply wasn't like Dylan's. Today I woke up, and it wasn't, do whatever it takes to not use today. It just wasn't a thought. It's just not there anymore. Later on, the 10th step promises, it reiterates the idea that this has nothing to do with us. The desire is removed from God. But for me, it happened after a thorough step five, and it hadn't come back. You know, in both occasions, the first time I was sober and this time, do a fifth step, walk up, and I'm free. And I also can look the world in the eye in a different way. You know, the guilt and shame has kind of been, I'm confessed, I'm open. And I also feel the first time, it's the first time I did a fifth step, it's the first time I went back to a meeting the next time and felt like I'd kind of earned my seat. I belong. Because I'm doing the work now. I've got some action. I'm just hanging out in the beginning, but now I've done the real hard work. It was embarrassing. I had pride and ego in the way. But I felt like I was a part of the fellowship at last at that point. The other part of it is the ego piece in there, and it's kind of like what we've all been talking about, that just being self-propelled to make these decisions is not enough. If my ego has not been smashed enough, I'm not going to tell you the secrets in step five. It has to be. That's why I believe there's a window of grace when we first get sober, and this willingness shows up, that, and it closes. We all have been there before where we're like, go to meetings, I'm sober, I'm feeling good, everything's great, and then boom, one day I just wake up and don't want to do it anymore. That's why I believe there is no time requirement on this stuff. If you are not physically withdrawing anymore, we should be moving towards this area as quick as possible to get this stuff out of the way. Because the willingness, and it'll go away for everybody. The door closes. People say, I'm just not willing to do the things I did when I was new. I was having a conversation with a guy outside, and it was also like, when your ass is beaten completely and you got nothing and you show up to this place, it's a little bit easier to get the willingness, because there's no, what else am I going to fucking do? But if you have some things going on for you and you got a life out there waiting on you, it's more difficult. But there's a window of willingness that has to happen, and it has to happen immediately. And we don't have control of when it closes, you know. So what happens is we're rocking along, we're going to five or six meetings a week, and then one day we get a girlfriend, and it's like, three or four meetings is probably good. And then it gets to two, and the sponsee calls, and we ignore the call, and someone says, hey, do you want to serve on this committee? You want to do it? No, I'm busy. I got a kids' baseball game, and all of a sudden it begins to close. And if we don't have a firm foundation and a relationship with God at that point, we're in trouble. I know that for me. And it's where, to me, that's where it begins. This is where I begin to know God. And actually, right after it says, the first instruction after returning home is, we thank God that we know him better. So these are things that are blocking us. we don't drink and use, or I don't drink and use because of the things that happen to me, the things I experience. I drink and use because I'm propelled beyond obsession that I can control. But certainly every time a beer is open or a bag's open or a pill's taken out of a bottle, there are thoughts of the things going on in my head that I've been a part of and been in the past that I want to try to bury away. So it works two ways. And we can't run from the truth anymore. You know, the truth is that we did some crazy shit out there. It's shameful. But it's also the archway that we walk through to a new freedom when we confess and openly talk about these things with somebody. And maybe the first time you have real intimate conversation with another man in your life, and it's a very powerful experience. There's a camaraderie that happens in places like this, you know, where it's like, these are my brothers. And it's, the book talks about it. We were passengers on a ship liner moments after rescue, and everybody's hugging each other. We got black in here, we got white, we got rich, we got poor, we got educated, we got uneducated, but everybody's the same, one unit. But it says this fellowship is not enough to hold us together as we are today. Really what fellowship is talking about is the fellowship of the Spirit, the fellowship of people who have had the common solution, had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. To be a part of what the guys have in rooms that you're interested in, you have to do 4 and 5. So you see the guy and goes, there's something different about him. There's a light in his eye. There's a confidence that he has that I don't have. It's because he's done the work, you know. And this was the first part of the major idea of that, to get in and write it all. And even if you don't write it, there was stuff that I confessed that I wasn't willing to write, just in case that notebook fell in the wrong hands. But before I opened it, I sat down and said, one time I did this. Okay. One time I did this. The sponsor said, yeah, I did that too. That made you feel like shit. Okay, it's done. Let's go. Boom, 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 boom. And then the crazy part is you get 5 or 6 years clean and you do it again and you have some of the same behaviors going on. Oh, shit. Now it's much harder to discuss. So that's what we talked about when we are getting better, but we don't fully get better. The book actually says that we recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. For Dylan and I, and for you guys too, actually, the allergy that we have is inconsequential. It doesn't mean nothing. You'll die with it, but who cares? If I don't put the first beer in, I don't need the second one. The allergy is just one of those things. The mental thing that we recover from, this mental twist and blank spots that always drives me back, we do recover from that too, step 1 through 11. The spiritual part, however, is something we don't recover from. We still have it. If Dylan and I were recovered spiritually, we would be at the house on the couch. We wouldn't be here because we know that this takes out some insurance against a slip, drives us deeper into relationship with each other and God because we are not spiritually fixed yet. And there is no spiritually getting fixed. This whole process of this thing. So you can do a fifth step with multiple years sober and talk about, you know, pornography, addiction in that area, cheating on my wife, doing all this stuff or whatever. And it's okay too. Who cares? Say it anyway. So that's really all I got on 4 and 5. The only thing I can suggest is this is one of those things. It's like, I'm not a thrill seeker, but I understand if somebody can explain to me what jumping out of an airplane is, but I won't ever experience it until I do it. So we could talk for hours about how powerful and beautiful 4 and 5 is, but in order to join the fraternity that we're in, you must do it yourself, and you must do it all the way. And now, hopefully, what I got in your head is when you sit down to start reading, you're saying, that guy showed up and said, if I didn't tell everything, I wouldn't get over alcohol, and that is the truth. We don't like to say definites and stuff, but if you have stuff in your fifth step and you don't tell, you'll get drunk again. That's all I got. Thanks.
Thanks, TJ. Dylan, drug addict. You know, one of the first inventories, the first inventory I wrote, I had this resentment against my daughter for not calling me dad. And there's this bridge you got to cross when you come from 3 into 4, right? And I kind of alluded to it. My problems are coming at me. How do I shift that my problems are coming from me? 67, it says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where have we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. You know, and I had to look because here's where I shift, right, that my problems are coming from me. Well, number one, I hadn't been a dad. I'd been in prison her entire life and walked out of her life when she was 6 months old. You know, and that's there's a lot of hard truths to swallow, and generally guys fall into one or two camps. It's either real uncomfortable to write or it's real uncomfortable to say. Sometimes both. So that, you know, it propels me into five. And, you know, there's some other inventories. We talk about resentment a lot. But the fear inventory, there's this really interesting line. It says, perhaps there's a better way, we think so, for we are now, meaning currently, as we're in the middle of this inventory, on the basis, meaning the foundation of trusting and relying upon God. And just some practical tips. When I have a guy write an inventory, when I write an inventory, you know, I pray into it and I pray out of it, because I'll sit in that shit. And I find it very beneficial to go through the work annually because I resurface. That's not saying it's the right way or the wrong way. That's just the way that I'm kind of inclined to do it, and I like the effect produced. Because I'll start to take credit for the things that happen in my life. You know, i.e. getting sober, blah, blah, blah. So then, you know, we go into this fifth step, and TJ talked about these dark crannies, and that shit's real important, man. But number one is, what qualifies me to listen to a fifth step, and what am I driving at? Fifth step is not a life management tool, nor is the fourth step, right? Because if, here's the thing, man, the steps, if you're just using them to make your life look better, are a code and or philosophy, right? I have to have an experience with these things. And four and five is really kind of smashing home the bait and switch that selfishness is the root of my problem, and this is the way I show up. You know, I had resentments that were fancied, narratives I had made up in my head. I don't know if anybody else that's ever happened to, probably just me, you know. And I had believed the lie for so fucking long because I can't differentiate the true from the false, truly. You know, so I go into this fifth step, and what was so beneficial, my first one, man, God bless Mark R. So, you know, I got all this shit that's not wrote down, and he hit me with a curveball. So we get out and we say a prayer, and he said, all right, this one's for me. God, I'm only here to be helpful. I'm not here to judge. And then he proceeded to tell me his shit. Because see, here's the thing, man. Until such an understanding is produced, no real work can be done. Until you believe that I've been in the same shoes you have, not externally. I sponsor dudes, they got three businesses. They got kids that live in the house with them, and they're successful. That's not what we're talking about. The same problem and the same difficulty internally. So, you know, and I held something back from my first fifth step. And here's the thing, man. There's a difference between relief and freedom, right? Relief is temporary, and the book promises freedom. So what lens am I looking at this through? But there's freedom in brokenness, right? This idea that confession in and of itself is going to be the thing that relieves me. The point it's really trying to hammer home in the fifth step, when I'm considering these first five proposals, is how truly fucked I am on my own power. And it drives me into the sixth step. Right, but when I sit for that hour, I'm looking at this. Do I believe I have this physical allergy, this obsession of the mind, all of this coupled with the spiritual malady? And do I believe that my life ran drunk or sober, high or sober, is unmanageable without the help of God, right? Am I even willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself that can take me further today than I am? Right? And am I willing to abandon myself utterly to this idea? Have I been completely honest in this inventory? Then I can pray and thank God that I know Him better. Because that's where I find God, is through the brokenness. It's not through the cool shit. You know, I overheard some guys talking about, like, I need God in the high spots, and I get that. I'm just a dude that's generally gets his ass kicked by life. Not a lot. You know, I have a lot of high spots, but for most other people, they would view them as medium. So, you know, there's this really cool thing in six. So I've looked at all this shit, right? And depending on your sponsor, he's going to make a list while you're listening to this inventory that's going to come out to be the eighth step, but also a list of defects. And here's the thing, man. When I was sitting where y'all were, shit was all over my head. Because I got no experience with how they really transpired. The miracles of 6 and 7 happened through the actions of 8 through 10. Really. And really 8 through 12. Because they're going to continue to show up. I used to say in 8 and 9, but my experience has kind of differed. All right, then. Just drag your nuts across the carpet, brother. sorry, squirrel. Anyway, because I get this list of defects, right? And I've been through the steps quite a few times, about 4. And the same things show up, right? I have to be important or else you'll leave me, right? I have to be validated. It's all of this stuff, right? I need to dominate a room. Everybody needs to know who I am, blah, blah, blah. But I'm also insecure, right? You know, there's this whole dichotomy of the way I show up. And in 6, when I'm really looking at it, right, because, you know, we say it's only 2 paragraphs and there's not a lot on it. The whole book is 6 and 7, especially up to this point. We've been talking about character defects, right, and how they manifest. We talk about self and fear and self-seeking and all of these, how I show up in my sex conduct and my relationships. You know, and it's a lifelong process. And, you know, my sponsor loves to talk about the polishing, right? I have experience with my defects on a daily basis, and I'll get into some of that into 10 and 8 and 9. But what about the shit I'm not willing to let go of? Well, there's a prayer in there that I actually just got awareness about 2 weeks ago. You know, that's the beauty of this thing, man. If you think you need to nail it out of the gate, you're sadly mistaken. I definitely didn't, right? Because the goal of this whole process, and it echoes it throughout the book, in the foreword to the first edition, right, they talk about helping others. In the second paragraph of the doctor's opinion, helping others. The second half of Bill's story, helping others. Like, it's all through here, right? But how do I become a good teacher if I'm not a good student? I have to remain teachable. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Some shit's not objectionable to me. Porn, not objectionable. Right? The need to be important, the need to be seen is not always objectionable to me. So am I praying, if I still cling to something and I will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. That's an ongoing process, right? Because I had this idea that I had to be right to get right, and I had to be 100% willing 100% of the time. My experience is it's not always true, you know? Because at the end of the day, we're human beings and we're not saints. But then it does this weird, the 7th step prayer flips it on its head. It says, my creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. It just told me to pray for the willingness for things that I find objectionable. Well, then another bait and switch, right? I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Here's the thing, man. The need to be important for guys like me and TJ is super beneficial to other people in a setting like this. Now, when I'm talking to my daughter about fucking astrology and I tell her she don't know what she's talking about because she got it off an internet article, it's not very beneficial. You know, that's a real conversation. I had to make amends for that. I went off. I was like, you need to do your research, read these books. You're just reading some shit some hippie chick with crystals in her bra wrote. You know? Because here's the other thing, man, is I think I know everything. Probably just me, right? I'm an expert in almost every department. But when I'm in that 5th step, and I start to see, like, how selfish I really am, tied to these resentments, these fears, this sex conduct. I'm not a big, you know, listen, there's two schools of thought, and I don't know that one's right or wrong. I find one more effective because I wrote just a sex, like, a, you know, a boom boom with ladies inventory, and it worked at that time. But what I found very effective is to use that inventory in intimate relationships, because all it really is an extended resentment inventory and how truly fucking selfish I am, right? And, you know, I don't want to get super mechanical, but the attitude I come out of that fifth step with, I didn't have a magical experience driving, well, walking from the meeting house to the sober living. You know, and I go and I do this hour, my first fifth step, and I'm selfish as shit, you know? I had no list of defects at this time, but I had an internal understanding that there's nothing I can do about any of this, because a lot of it showed up, the resentments from periods of sobriety, right? It drives home the idea that I have to have God. That's what this whole deal is about. The need for access to power. We talked about it last night, lack of power being the dilemma. Dilemma is the problem. And it breeds sincerity, right? The flip side of this whole thing, let me tell y'all a little story. So I was going to save this for amends, but I think it's very important. Why do we write an inventory? Why do we do 5 and 6 and 7? It's a perspective shift, right? So one of the happiest moments of my life happened Thanksgiving of 2021. My daughter referred to me as her father. Now, I just shared with you about the inventory I first wrote where she wouldn't call me dad. Always been Dylan, you know, and whatever. Today, I'm not so caught up in the name as I am the relationship. But at that point in time, very much so. So I was adopted, and I was married to this narrative that I was left in less than ideal conditions and blah, 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 blah. I was a victim. So I reconnect with my real mother through a dating app. So there's this lady that, anyway, that like my real mom was like her mom, you know? And this was this past year. And I'm driving, so, you know, I find out that this lady lives not far from me. So I'm like, well, damn, now I got to do something. But I'm kind of stuck on the amends, right? Because I had wrote inventory on this lady before and thought I saw the truth. So I'm talking to this guy, and I'm like, yeah, man, you know, da-da-da-da-da, but F that lady. He's like, hey, man, you might want to look at that. I was like, ah, no big deal, you know what I mean? So I call a sponsee of mine, and I'm telling him about this whole thing, and you know, because here's the other thing, man. As a sponsor, I don't put myself on some sort of pedestal like I'm better than it. I'm not better than anybody in this room, I promise you, right? We all have our own demons and our own darkness. We're all just trying to trudge along the path. And something I learned from my sponsor is to share my darkness with the guys that come behind me so they understand that we're all on equal footing. We all have struggles. And So I have a conversation with my real mom, and I call her Carol, and she says, cut the shit, I'm your mother. And I say some words, you know, like, with all due respect, you didn't raise me, and I'm grown, blah, 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 blah. That's the genesis for all these conversations. And then I write this piece of inventory. Now, mind you, I'm almost 2 years sober, right? I think I'm somebody, and I've gotten somewhere. What came out of that is a perspective shift. At 2 years sober, I'm still so selfish that the happiest day of my life, I want to deny another human being. I don't give a shit if you want me to call you Big Bird, really, you know? But these defects show up in the form of selfishness. My need to be right, my need to be important, my need to be understood. Show up. And I remember there's a guy, for those of y'all that were here in June, Brandon P. lives in Waleska, Georgia. I called him to read this piece of pitiful little inventory. I keep it in my wallet. Changed my life. And so I read it to him, and he starts chuckling, you know. Said, well, Dylan, all you need to really quit doing is saying the Lord's Prayer and the Serenity Prayer and sponsoring guys, because you're not doing any of those things. And I was like, all right, you know. And I'll get further. Well, fuck it. We'll go there. I got a little bit of time. So, you know, it breeds the sincerity. And this is right after we had went through the steps, probably 2 months. And, you know, I had all these experiences of gratitude and prayer and meditation. And not that time. You know, we talk about being bonded in brokenness, and that's where we find God. So, the end of January, it's raining. It's always raining in my stores. But anyway, I drive over to this lady's house. Never met her in person, by the way, because she gave me up for adoption when I was probably 8-9 months old. And I go, I'm nervous as shit. Y'all know the prayer of St. Francis? So there's this line in there. To understand rather than be understood, or words to that effect. And I'm driving my sister's car, can't figure out the Bluetooth, so I'm just chain smoking Marlboros, you know, and this line just keeps going through my head. I don't understand it. And I go in there, and, you know, she tells me this really funny story about her and my dad ripping strippers off with macadamia nuts. That's the first story she told me in person, because she's one of us, you know what I mean? And, so it gets to the end, and I have this real powerful experience. If you've ever sponsored anybody, for my guys that have been sober before, and Roscoe, you'll know what I'm talking about. You see and hear yourself in other people, right? And y'all might have that experience here, building the camaraderie. I've never in my life felt more connected to a human being than I did in that moment. Because, see, she said what I couldn't put words to, that I still had some guilt and shame about of why I walked out of my daughter's life. She said, Dylan, I knew I couldn't give you a good life, but I wanted to give you a shot at one because I was the sickest I'd ever been at that point in my life. Now, granted, the circumstances I grew up with, sometimes I will tell you were less than ideal, but I was loved. And, you know, I come out of there and I have this powerful experience with God, and it's like an orgasm, hard to explain the feeling, but I can tell you how to do it, you know? And all of that started with a pen and a piece of paper and conversation. You know, this shit's really simple, man. It's not fucking rocket science. It's my first sponsor read at a third grade level and taught me more about how to live the words off the pages of this book than anybody I've ever met. I had this idea that somehow I would come out of the fifth step. I just went back through the work with another group of guys. You know, and it's not my successes where God really works. Those are kind of like, you know, the evidence. But where it really comes in is the brokenness. You know, it is my willingness to have him remove these defects. It doesn't mean they always get removed. You know, now I don't steal shit anymore. I don't shoot at people anymore. I don't break in pharmacies, right? I mean, that's just kind of, that disappeared when I quit shooting dope. But these other ones, man, this selfishness, it's an evil and corroding thread driven by fear. And when you really get a full dose of that in 6 and 7, and we're going to take a break in a minute and we'll go into 8 and 9, it gives you a brand, it kick-started the fire up under my ass. Like, six is the first step for the rest of my life, because there's nothing I can do to fix me. Right? Y'all are familiar with cars having defects? Right? Like, say, Roscoe, what year is your Ranger? 2023. So let's say all the airbags in the 2023s, 20,000 of them don't deploy. What are they going to do? Why? Car don't work on itself. Six and seven. Recall to manufacturer. You know, all these defects I trip about, here's the paradox of it, is they all drive me back to God. So how can they be bad? The only thing that separates me from God is my conscious mind and my judgment. And the very thing that I think is so horrible, this selfishness, ends up bringing me back to God. So is it really that bad? You know. Let's take a break, come back at 10:55.